South Dakota Public Broadcasting, sdpb.org.
We'll call the House Education Committee to order, and we'll be turning the internet on, so those of you that are in the room, please turn your cell phones off, and the secretary will call the roll.
Bolin?
Here.
Bruner?
Here.
Elliott?
Here.
Fargin?
Here.
Hamill?
Here.
Hunt?
Here.
Killer?
Here.
Schleckaway and Olson are excused. Sly?
Here.
Sorensen?
Here.
Schleckaway's there.
Schleckaway's
excuse me,
here.
Never mind. Van Gerpen. Thompson?
Here.
Vanman?
Here.
McLaughlin?
Present, yes. Chair will entertain a motion to approve the minutes. Moved by Representative Hunt, was it? Seconded by Representative Bolin. Any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The minutes are approved. We have a change in the program here today. House Bill 1105 will not be heard. It will be postponed. Representative Kirkaby is in Rapid City and is the sponsor of the bill. That bill will be heard at a later date. Apologize for some of the delay, but since he's not here and we do not have any other bills, I think that we will postpone that one until he is back in town. At this time, I requested that the Department of Education come in and discuss with us some of the most important aspects that we're going to be faced with, and that is the formula for state aid to education. It's one of the basics that we're addressing, and on very, very short notice, they came in and are prepared, and so at this time we'll turn it over to who's going to handle it. Tammy, if you'll come forth and state your name and tell us a little what you do and why you're the one that was selected to be here this morning, and I think you're set up with a PowerPoint presentation, and thank you so much for coming in on a short notice. And if let's watch the presentation, and then if you have questions, why, we'll have someone here to try to address that, and then we'll take it from there. So before we start, we have two new pages here this week, and they'll be here for a couple of weeks. If you'd like to come to the microphone up here and introduce yourself, just tell us who you are and where you're from, and we're delighted to have you. So just come up to where Tammy was and push the green button so it's lit.
I'm Brianna Dirksen. I'm from Millbank.
Welcome.
I'm Don Beck, and I'm from Pierre.
Thank you for being here. Okay. All right. Tammy, do you want to go ahead then?
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tammy Darnell, and I am the Director of Finance for the Department of Education. I'm actually fairly new to this role. I started in that position in the end of May, beginning of June of this past fiscal year. However, I did work for the Bureau of Finance and Management previously to that, and state aid fell as one of my assignments there, too. So I like to think I'm pretty familiar with the formula. Hopefully I can answer your questions. First of all, Representative McLaughlin had asked me to give you guys a little bit of history. Prior to 1995, our state aid funding was really categorical aid. There were many, many different categories in it, and it was all went out to the schools, and it was also expenditure driven. So the more the school spent, the more money they got. We started to kind of experience not as bad as this time, but kind of a fiscal downturn at that time, and also the state was facing a lawsuit on the equity of the funding. So the legislature and the governor's office at that time looked at the formula and decided that we needed to have a more equitable way of funding the school district so that each school was basically guaranteed a base amount per student So that at that time, they looked at the formula and they came up with the current, not the current funding formula in this form, but a very similar funding formula. They also recognized that small schools didn't realize the economies of scales that the larger schools had. So at that time, they came up with a small school factor. This formula stayed in place for quite a while, and then a few summers ago, we had a state aid task force in place, and it began to look at the formula again. And at that time, some suggestions came out of the task force. It went to the legislative session in 2007, and some changes were made. One of the changes were, prior to that, we had also an average daily membership that the formula was based on. So we would look at the school district throughout the year and look at your average membership. So if you had a child that started in September and then graduated in December, you'd get counted for half that student because he was only there half the time. When the changes came to the formula, one of the changes, or in 2007, one of the changes was to switch to a fall enrollment. So now we look at the kids that are in the seat on the last Friday in September, and we count those kids. Now, if you have a child that only goes to school part-time because they're a member of a colony or they're homeschooled part of the time, they still only get counted as part of a student. But we count the kids that are there. So now if this child starts in September and they graduate in December, the school district receives funding for that child for the full year because they're in the seat then. Another change that was made was the small school factor now became the small school adjustment. It was very, very similar. However, the small school factor was actually based on a portion of whatever the current year state aid per student allocation was. The small school factor, or adjustment, I'm sorry, froze it at the 2007 per student allocation. Two other changes that were added were the decreasing enrollments or the two-year averaging. That was to help the schools that are declining enrollments to kind of soften the decline. So instead of looking at the number of kids right there, we would look back at the previous year's enrollment, or the prior year and then the current year, and then we would say, okay, if you were declining, we'd take the average between the two, and that would be what you would, your per student, or your state aid, I'm sorry, would be based off of. The other change was the increasing enrollments, and that was to recognize that we have a few school districts in the state that are actually increasing fairly significantly. And so what that did was looked at when we, maybe I should back up, when we take fall enrollment, when we took our fall enrollment count this September, that's what's going to be used to pay out 2010 state aid. So you always have a year lag in that fall enrollment. However, so when we took this fall enrollment though this September, what we also looked at is, okay, last September when we took it, did the school district grow significantly between last September and this September? And if they did by more than 5% or 25 students, then they can receive the increasing enrollment, and that's one half of the per student allocation. Any questions so far? And I would rather have, if it's okay, Mr. Chair, I'd rather have you guys stop me as you go along. If you have questions, that's easier for me.
Surely. Are there any questions at this point from what Tammy has said? Yes. Representative Bolin, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When we say that the small school adjustment was frozen, does that mean the total amount of money that's available, or the, explain that just a little bit more?
No, it's not the total money that was available. It still varies depending on how many schools are eligible and what their population, their student enrollment is. But prior to that, the maximum that schools could have received would be 20% of whatever the per student allocation is. Now the maximum that they can receive per student is 20% of the 2007 per student allocation. And hopefully, when I get to my PowerPoint, I'm going to talk about that a little bit more, and hopefully when you see it there, it'll make a little bit more sense. But if not, please stop me then, and I'll try to explain further.
I think the point she's making is that instead of that going up every year as it used to, it was frozen based on the 2007, so that figure will remain constant. Okay.
Well, after that little bit of history, I have a presentation here, and I apologize. The last time I updated it was August of last year, so, I mean, it's based on 2009 data. Of course, we have some more recent numbers, but I was afraid if I tried to go back and fix it in a hurry, I might mess something up. So I'm going to go through this presentation, and then if we have time, I'd like to take a couple minutes just to show you our website and maybe help you find some of the information you might be looking for. Okay. You'll have to excuse my very boring slides. I'm a numbers person, not an artist. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Can I have a page? Okay.
For our audience, we realize, our internet audience, we realize you're not going to be able to see this, but we do have a screen set up in each end of the room, and the presentation will be based on this visual slide. So.
Okay. I'm going to really try to break this down into three very simple parts to the formula. A lot of people, when they see the formula, they start to read the statute. You kind of start to just glaze over because it does seem very, very complex. However, if you really start to look at it, it's very, very simple. There's three steps. First of all, you have to determine the local need, and that's the overall need for state aid. And what that is you take the per student allocation times the fall enrollment number, then you add in the small school adjustment, and then the increasing enrollments. The second part is to determine the local effort, and that's the part that will be picked up by the locals over property tax. And so what we have to find out is the property valuations and make an estimate for property valuation growth, and then we need to set the levies, and Kettler-Gabriel plays into that. And then finally, we determine what the state share of it is, and that's just simply the local need minus the local effort.
Any question? That's the heart of the thing right there. So is there any question now on what the Kettler-Gabriel amendment did? Or I think it's important that you get your basis here when we start. So
and I will go over the Kettler-Gabriel.
Okay, when we, good.
I'll break down each of these now and kind of go over them. I'll show you the statute that really drives it, and then I'll kind of put it in my own words how it works.
Good. Thank you, Tammy.
Okay, first of all, local need, 1313.10.1. That's really, if you want to look for information on the formula, that's your place to start. It's 1313.10.1. And here's the statute that defines local need. And again, it's the per student allocation multiplied by the fall enrollment, the small school adjustment, and then 1313.80 is the increasing enrollments. Okay, and here is 1313.10.1.4 explains the per student allocation. And last year, again, we had kind of a reset of the per student allocation. So for fiscal year 2009, the per student allocation is 46.64, and then each fiscal year after that, it's increased by the index factor. Again, and here's a definition of the index factor statute, again, 1313.10.1, and the index factor is the annual change in the consumer price index, or 3%, whichever is lesser. Okay, so now calculating the index factor. As per statute, the increase for the year before, the year preceding, the year of adjustment is used. So for doing fiscal year 2010, we would actually look back at fiscal year 2008 CPI. Last year, again, this is based on 2009. So for fiscal year 2009, we actually went back and looked at fiscal year 2007's increase in the consumer price index, and at that time it was 2.5%. However, I've heard a lot of times people say that the school districts are capped. They're not. This is just the floor to start with, and then the legislature can, and they have, and the governor can, and they have added more money than what the statutory increase is. And this is just kind of a history of what those increases have been. And this does not include the one-time funding. Okay, calculating the per student allocation. And again, this is based on fiscal year 2009. So first of all, the statutory increase was we took the 2008 per student allocation, which was 45.28.80, multiplied that by 2.5% to get an increase of $113.22. The legislature then added an additional 0.5%, and there was a qualifier in that the school districts had to guarantee that they increased their salaries and benefits by 3%. That extra 0.5% then added another $22.64. So adding that all together, the per student allocation per student allocation for fiscal year 2009 is 46.64.66, and that was back in the statute that we looked at. And the reason we had to reset it back in 1313.10.1 is because this was over and above what the statutory required increase was. So anytime you don't follow the statutorily required increase, you have to go back and change that definition. Any questions?
Representative Sorensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I taught school for quite a few years, and I guess I thought the 3% was automatic. I didn't understand, or which is less, the rate of inflation of 3%. It's probably because rarely was it ever less than 3%. Can you tell me, or do you know in your recent recollection, is it very often under 3%?
Actually, yes, it is. Again, if you go back, go back and look at this slide. In 2004, the index factor was 1.5%. In 2005, it was 2.2%. In 2006, it was 2%. And then 2007 and 2008, I'd have to go back and look, but I think those were one of the years it might have been slightly over 3%, one of the years it was 3%. And then again, for 2009, the index factor, or the consumer price index, I should say, was 2.5%, and the schools received 3%.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you.
Okay, now to the fall enrollment piece of it. As I explained earlier, with the passage of Senate Bill 157 of the 2007 legislative session, we had a newly defined fall enrollment that's used to calculate the state aid payments. And state aid will be calculated based on the higher of the previous year's fall enrollment as defined in law, or the average of the previous 2 years' fall enrollment. Again, that's our declining enrollment or two-year averaging. You'll see it or hear it discussed both ways. Any questions? Okay.
A lot of you get the significance of that? Okay. Representative Sorensen.
Thanks for seeing the puzzled look on my face. It's there quite often. But so what I'm understanding is that the inflation factor might be under 3%, but the other line shows what the state has put in, and sometimes that's been higher.
Correct.
Okay. I guess I wasn't always aware of that. Thank you.
Yep. You're welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other? Okay. This is just the statute defining local need. I'm not going to read the whole thing unless anybody really wants me to. Okay. And here is really the calculation of the fall enrollment. Okay, to calculate the fall enrollment to be used in calculating state aid for the next school year, the following would have to be done. You'd look at the number of students enrolled on the last Friday of the current year. So for doing FY 2010, we looked at the student enrollment the last Friday of this past September. We subtracted out the number of students for whom the district receives tuition in, and then you add the number of students for whom the district pays tuition, and that gives you your fall enrollment for the current school year. And then you compare that. Then you look back and average out what the fall enrollment was for the past year, and you compare the average of fall enrollment for the current year and the prior, and then the larger of the two is used for calculating what the schools will get paid for next year. Simple but complicated. Any questions?
Representative Thompson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Darnell, we are looking at a change in the taxation of agricultural land. Will that have any impact on school districts?
I'm sorry, sir. I'm not prepared to answer questions like that. I'm hoping to just stick to the formula and everything. It will have a change. I'm not ready to discuss how it is. I guess I need to study it more and really see what passes.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry I didn't go through you either.
On such short notice here, I asked him to come in to just kind of explain the formula. We'll get to some of those types of questions, though. We're not going to just forget about your question, but right. Okay. Yes, go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so now from the local, or we can, now we have the fall enrollment and we have the per student allocation, the two things that we need for determining the local need. So all we do is take the fall enrollment, and remember this includes either the fall enrollment from this past fall or the averaging. We take that times the per student allocation, and that gives us our local need or our total need. Okay. Okay, now on to the small school adjustment. Again, as I go ahead.
Yes, Representative Elliott.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you refresh my mind again about why it was changed to the fall?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
There are several reasons. One of the reasons was so that when we came to the legislative session, we had a firmer number. Another reason, again, is that the school districts, you know, if you have that kid and he starts in September and he graduates in December, you don't lose any cost because that student is gone. There is still the cost there. You don't look in December and go, okay, I had 10 students graduate, I can decrease my cost somewhere. So that was part of the reasoning, too, is because the school districts realize the cost throughout the whole year for those kids. Now, on the flip side, you could have a kid that moves into the district in December, and you won't receive funding for him until the next year. So really, it kind of averages out. But I think, to me, the biggest reason was so we had a firmer number going in.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, again, the small school adjustment, this is the statute that explains it. For districts with fall enrollment of 200 or less, you take multiply 0.2 times 423772, and that 423772 is what the per student allocation was back in fiscal year 2007. Again, previously when we had the small school factor, it would have been 0.2 times the current year's per student allocation. So that's really the biggest difference here. And then for districts with fall enrollment greater than 200 but less than 600, you multiply the fall enrollment times the negative 0.0005, add 0.3 to that result, and multiply the sum obtained times 4237. Is anybody a math teacher here? Because really, this sounds complicated here, but I'm going to show you something in a minute that will kind of make it pop into place. First of all, this is just kind of a quick look, kind of by enrollment, really what you get. Again, if you're 200 or less, you're going to get that full 847.54. Once you hit 201, it starts to go down. You only get 845.43. Well, I should say only, but you get 845.43. And then it steadily declines down at 599. You get $2.12 per student. At 600, you don't receive anything. And here's the picture. It's a simple linear regression, if that makes sense to anybody. And that's how the formula, I mean, when you look at the statute, you're like, where the heck did they come up with these numbers? Again, it's just a very simple linear function. Any questions?
Any question on that part? Representative Sorensen.
Hope you don't get tired of me.
Nope.
I suppose the premise behind the small school formula is just so I understand that, is the fact that maybe the smaller you get, you might lose a little bit of efficiency. You still have to have so many teachers, so many whatever, and that's the idea behind the small school factor. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, I'm trying to remember to go through you.
I'll try to answer that one. I think the answer to that question was that when they were trying to pass the formula bill, they had to back around and get enough support from the legislators to do it. So I think it was more of a political decision than it was an actual dollar and cent. It resulted in dollars and cents to small school districts, but it was more of a political decision than an actuarial one.
Okay.
Yes. Do you have further comments on that?
Oh, no. I was always told that it was, and again, the changing the formula was before my time, but I was told it was because smaller schools don't have those efficiencies of scale. You still have to heat the building. You still have to have a superintendent and everything else.
And I think the concept was that because in many states there is this type of built into the formula where smaller schools that are not as efficient do receive some extra adjustments. It's not just peculiar to the state of South Dakota.
Okay, now the increasing enrollment formula. Another new component of the changes that were made in Senate Bill 157 is the addition of for the increasing enrollments. Districts that grow by a minimum of 25 students or 5% may receive one half of their per student allocation times the number of students by which the current year's fall enrollment exceeds the fall enrollment in calculating state aid. So they only get paid for those students that they grew by on that one half. Okay, so this means that a district of 100 students only has to grow by 5 students to receive funding, or that Sioux Falls, with an enrollment at that time of over 19,000, would only have to grow by 0.1% in order to receive this funding. Again, here's the statute for increasing enrollments. I'm not going to read through it unless you guys want me to. Okay, and then after 1 year of having the increasing enrollments in place with the new formula, we realized that there are actually some school districts that were eligible to receive money both for the two-year averaging or the decreasing enrollments and also for the increasing enrollments. So House Bill 1288 of the last year's session addressed this fact by adding language that stating that a district which qualifies for both may only receive the higher of the two. So they're not getting both of those items. Okay, so now we'll kind of pull it all together. We had our fall enrollment previously was 569,820,685. The small school adjustment, now remember these numbers are estimates that I had back in August, so again, these are not the final numbers, was 18.1 million. And then at increasing enrollment at that time, we'd estimated as 3.7 million for a total local need of 591.6 million. Now again, that's the whole local need. So now we have to figure out which part the locals are going to pick up, and which part the state's going to pick up. Okay, first of all, we'll talk about local effort. And local effort is the amount of ad valorem taxes generated by a school fiscal year by applying the levies that we established. So really, local effort equals the valuations of the property times the levies. Okay, there's four classes of property that are recognized. We have the agricultural, the non-agricultural, the owner-occupied, and then the other, which is your utilities, commercial, and stuff like that. Long statute, this is where we end up changing the levies each year. Each year a bill is introduced, and we go through the whole process there, but this is the statute that will be changed if the levies are to be changed. Okay, valuations. Valuations represent 85% median level of assessment as determined by the Department of Revenue and Regulation. The property taxes are based on a calendar year basis, January to December. However, state aid is based on a state fiscal year basis, which is July to June. So you can see there we kind of have a problem. So when calculating the property valuations, you have to take one half of the current calendar year and one half of the next calendar year to determine the property valuations for that fiscal year for state aid. For example, for fiscal year 2009, local effort is based on one half of taxes payable in 2008 and one half of the taxes payable in 2009 to come up with what the total need is. Any questions on that? All right, this spreadsheet kind of shows you, kind of walks through what I just said. You have to look at the levies for the year that we already know for sure, and then we kind of project forward what the valuations will grow by in the following year, and from there we have to go and kind of set the levies. Like I said, one half of 07 pay 08 plus one half of 08 pay 09 equals the total local share. Okay, typically when we do our budget, preliminary information regarding growth in the valuations for taxes payable in calendar 2009 will be received in September. So we have a very preliminary estimate what the growth is. We usually get the final information late December, early January from the Department of Revenue. And then when calculating state aid for the next fiscal year for 2010, the growth for the next calendar year, 2010, must be estimated. So that's where we kind of estimate again what we think values will grow by. Here's kind of a history, and again, this is as of August, so I don't have the most recent in there, but here's a history of the valuation growth of the what we estimated versus actual. As you can see, as we've seen that property valuations have increased, we've tried to increase what our estimates are. We do have to go a bit on the conservative side because, well, first of all, who would have ever expected growth like that? So each time we were very conservative, saying, okay, next year it's going to level out, because if you grow by so much, you have to grow by a lot more in order to maintain that same percentage. And then we kind of started to bring it up, but, you know, it's just a hard thing to hit, and then this year, who knows? And then last year, we actually ended up having to put in more state general funds, not necessarily because the valuations didn't grow as much as we anticipated, but because of the changes in the formula. The increasing enrollments ended up costing more. So if we hit this number too low, then the state does have to come in and pick up whatever the difference is. Any questions? Yep.
Representative Sorensen.
Thank you again. So the local effort valuations, this slide right here, if I'm reading that right, and I've got to see the big picture well, I'm sorry to understand that. This chart shows then that of the total aid to education that a student or a school receives per student, the local effort is growing. They're paying a higher percentage every year, is that correct?
No, because we adjust each year trying to maintain that same state share. So it's not that they're paying a higher percentage. This is how much the statewide valuations have grown by. Valuations on a statewide basis.
Okay.
Yeah, this
Thank
is just
you.
Valuations.
Not the percentage.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay.
Yes, Representative Bullen.
So if a school district has an extremely valuable property, their amount of state aid would be very, very limited.
Good question. That's correct, because really when we set all this stuff, we set it on a statewide basis. When it's paid out to the school districts based on your ability to raise. So if you have some very high-value property and you're able to generate more local effort than the district next to you, you will receive less dollars from the state, and the district next to you will receive more dollars from the state. However, your total amount that you receive for state aid should be equitable. It should be the same amount per student, you know, plus obviously the small school adjustment. So that's where the whole equity thing is, and that's why we were getting sued back in 1995, is because we had some districts that were able to go out and they were able to generate all of this value, and then we had some districts that couldn't generate anything. So it's a.
If I could just follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Yes,
one more question.
Right ahead.
In the district I represent, we have at least one district that has tremendous value as far as their property is concerned, and other districts that have very limited ability to generate income. But eventually, it's at least on the baseline here, it's all going to be equalized, because the one district I'm referring to is going to get very minimal amount of money from the state, whereas others will receive a substantial amount from the state.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
We might. I'll make one comment, and then we'll go to Representative Hamill. Part of the whole history of the funding formula, not just in this state but in many, many states, it was often referred to as an equalization formula. And the whole purpose of the formula was to provide an equal educational opportunity for every student in every state, regardless of the school districts. Some of that disparity among some of the states varied 10,000 to 1. So in other words, there were some school districts for the same amount of effort could generate $10,000, and the poorer school district could, with the same amount of tax effort, could only get a dollar. So you can see that did not provide an equal educational opportunity. And that's the whole fundamental purpose of the equalization or the funding formula. So with that, Representative Hamill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There was a time when we had a very few number of districts that didn't receive any state aid in South Dakota because of the wealth of their district.
Mm-hmm.
How many do we have today, and which ones are they?
I'm sorry, I don't know that right offhand. I'd have to go back and look at the...
We can get that, though, and bring that at a later date.
Just to follow up, the only reason I asked that, and I was curious to see if that number had actually gone up or down in recent years. There may be some people, there may be those in the room that know the answer to that. I don't know. Thank you.
Okay. Ready to go on?
Yes.
Okay. We're coming into the home stretch, so stay with me. Okay, Cutler Gabriel. This statute, you have to read it about 20 times to memorize what it says, but it still doesn't really make sense. But basically what it's saying, that if your local effort... And this goes back to your question, Representative Sorensen, but if the local effort increases more than what the state share does, the next year you have to go in and you have to go back and try to set the levy so that the state is always maintaining the same level of effort. We have to go in and we have to look a year forward. When the statute was first done, or when the formula was first done, we were trying to do it based on, again, for fiscal year 2010, we would have tried to look at maintaining the same share as fiscal year 2010, they hit a case where they actually would have had to increase levies to do that. So what we do is we look forward to the next fiscal year. So now when we did 2010, we would have looked at 2011 to make sure, well, if the under statute, we looked forward to 2011 to make sure that the levy stayed at that level, or at the state share stayed at that level. I'm sorry, let me get into my other slides and hopefully I'll explain it better. Okay, again, this is just the statute. The part in the blue was a change that was done in Senate Bill 157, so that if the per student allocation does increase by more than 3%, the state has to pick up 100% of whatever that increase is. Okay, so the state may not decrease its share of state aid to be paid. To avoid possibly having to increase the levies, we must look out for 2 years. Again, for fiscal year 2010, we're going to look at 2011 and try to hit that, maintain our share of state aid. In the past, the state goal was approximately 54%. The state would pay 54%. The locals would pick up 46%. House Bill 1140, when we got the cigarette tax money, included $9 million in property tax relief. So that this changed what our goal was, and then our new goal was 57% at that time.
Do all of you get the significance of that? The state actually, with that tobacco money, paid the part that for the local effort as well. So they paid the state and the local effort, which in effect raised the state aid.
Right. Yep, increased our amount, that the amount that the state picked up. This is just a really tricky thing. Do you guys have any questions? Hopefully if you have a specific question, I can answer it better than I just explained it now. But.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you explain, you know, when we started out in the Jankel administration with 20%, and we got to 30% in the last couple of things, you know, the last thing that we did, just kind of give the chronology of how that happened.
Oh, you'd ask me to remember back. This is stuff I've just read. I haven't actually gone through, but you're correct. When the formula went into place and video lottery came in and we were able to offer property tax relief to the taxpayers, Governor Janklow did go in and he started picking up through the state aid formula, having the state pick up more and more of the share so that less and less of the burden fell on the local taxpayers. And you're right, he went from 20% to 30%. And then we kind of stayed right in there. And then again, this extra $9 million, I couldn't tell you what percent that is, but that was additional property tax relief. So we were going, the state, through this property tax relief with the cigarette tax and through the video lottery fund, actually offers relief to the taxpayers. So the state's picking up a bigger share of the state aid budget, and then we can lower levies. Is that what you're looking for?
Well, do you remember what was the share again before the cigarette tax relief? I was trying to remember what the split was on that.
It was 54%.
54.
54 state, 46 local.
One quick follow-up. What will it drop to on the governor's proposed budget, the share?
It's 55. I think it's 55.4.
Okay, so another quick follow-up. So to be clear, we're still above where we were prior to the cigarette tax.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
The cigarette tax was kind of a bonus that was put in there so as to protect the local property, but yeah, and the governor has recommended a change in that for this year, so
right.
Just so you're aware of the ramifications of that recommendation. So yes, go ahead.
Okay, so now here's where we can really kind of pull it together. We had state share equals local need minus local effort. Oh, and I should have gone back up to this slide up here. As you can see, when we figured it all through, the local effort was $255,981,000. So when we put it all together, we had our state share, which was, or I mean our local need, I'm sorry, which was $591 million. We subtract out that local effort, $255 million. So then the state share is $336.7 million approximately. And so that's how we come up with the number in the budget. Again, when we pay out the school districts, we look at each school district individually on what they can actually generate under those levies versus what they are eligible to receive based on their enrollments and their small school adjustment, and then the state pays the difference between what the locals could generate and what their local need is, their total need is.
Any questions? That's the end of the presentation. I'll answer some questions. I want to show you the website a little bit where you might be able to find some information you're looking for.
Before you get into that, I think Representative Olson has a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. We have the new valuations in, and we were just talking about this the other day, what the classes of property have done in terms of increases. Have you had a chance to look at those numbers yet? All three classes, have they grown? What their percentage of growth this year?
They've grown. That was back in December that I looked at that. I'm sorry, I've just had so much going. I'd have to go refresh my memory, but they've all grown. And you're correct. There are some classes that grow. I think this is what you're getting at. There's some classes that grow significantly more than other classes.
Follow up.
Yes, and perhaps you have another question or a comment relative to that. I know you've been involved and studied that quite deeply, so but go ahead with your question, and then if you want to make a comment, well, feel free to do so.
Yeah. Well, I asked that question because, you know, this year with the housing market sliding a little bit, commercial property sliding a little bit, ag property still increasing fairly substantially, I was just curious how they've slowed down and relative to each class. Have they still seen the amount of percent of growth that they have in the past, or as some classes started to slow down their valuation because of the softening of the housing market and, to a lesser extent, the commercial market?
For this past year, it was pretty much on track. Again, who knows what's going to happen in 2009. And if you want to grab me later or something, I can pull those up and we can look at them a little bit closer. I don't have it with me right now, but I guess I'm not prepared to discuss it because it's been a while since I've looked at it.
Yeah.
And because what bothers me a little bit is, you know, if things keep going the way they are, we could actually see a negative growth.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how a lot of our property taxes are founded upon, is we just count on the fact that they're going to grow. And the taxable, your tax bill can only grow 3%, but, you know, we always count on, well, of course it's going to probably grow more than 3%, but if we actually see a negative growth,
right.
We'll have to raise those mill levies anyway. So,
and that is a concern.
Yeah. And I think it's important to point out that that might be a weak spot in our particular funding approach here, and I think Representative Olson is alerting us that we need to be watching that rather closely. Is that the significance of your statement?
Yes.
Okay. Yes, Representative Sly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a question in regard to the funding for small school districts that was not brought in the presentation that I caught, and for the sparsity.
Oh, the sparsity.
Yes,
okay, I'm sorry.
I said small school. No, I'm sorry. I made a mistake.
Okay.
For the sparsity.
Right.
Could you share a little bit about how that works?
Well, again, we go and we look at. I have to get my sheet out. I mean, there's certain criteria that were set forth in statute, and as you know, the statute sunsetted this year. But we go and we look at, hold on, I just had it here. Okay. I thought this was a sheet I wanted. I'm sorry. I think it's on our website. Just a second.
One of the pages. I think I have a hard copy of that if you want it to. You want to give that to us in a minute. Is that the page you want or not?
That is the page I wanted. Okay. Thank you. I could not remember the cutoffs for all the criteria because they've changed a little bit. Okay, you have to have a fall enrollment of less than 500 students. You have to have a total land area of greater than 400 square miles. And then when you divide your enrollment by the land area, that ADM per square mile or that enrollment per square mile has to be less than 0.5. Then the other thing you look at is it has to be 15 miles from your high school to the next nearest high school as the crow flies. We use GPS for that. You have to be levying at the maximum allowable levies, and then your excess general fund balance has to be less than 30% in order to qualify.
Thank you.
Okay.
Good questions there. And that one may generate some interest because you know the governor has proposed the sparsity be removed. So,
and actually the statute sunsetted is what
happened. Yeah, it sunset. You're correct. You're absolutely correct. It was sunsetted, but it I guess he recommended that it not be continued. Okay, correction noted. Representative Sorensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And each state might be a little bit unique, but we're all responsible for educating our students according to state law. How do we rank with other states as far as the amount that the state puts in versus local? How do we rank? Any idea how we rank with the other 49 states in our nation? You probably have that or not?
I don't have that with me. Again, there's several websites you can go out to. You can go out to like the NCES, your National Council of State Legislators. They all have studies on that. And all of them, depending on what they roll in and look at it, all of them are a little different. The locals do pick up probably a little bit more than a lot of other states in South Dakota, but you have to remember that in South Dakota, we only have a sales tax. We don't have the personal income tax or anything like that. We don't have the minerals that North Dakota and Wyoming have. And then I guess really the way I look at it too, and this is just my personal opinion, is whether I'm paying it through sales tax or whether I'm paying it through my property tax, it's all taxpayer dollars. So to me, I don't like that we split and say, okay, the locals are picking up so much, the state's picking up so much. It's all taxpayer dollars.
I suppose that's relative, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
I suppose that's relative to how comfortable the people are on the local level with their property tax. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Representative Boland.
I have a question about other sources of funding for schools.
Okay.
Bank franchise tax. And I understand that way stations in particular school districts allow districts to gain resources. Could you comment on that briefly?
I guess I'm not sure what you want me to comment on, but yes, that's accurate that they can. And I think you're probably getting to, so some school districts are able to generate more revenue on that level than other school districts.
That is correct.
And that is correct. That is one of the things that was looked at in the state aid task force, is equalizing all that revenue too. It's not something that was brought forward. You know, obviously, if you did that, you'd have some big winners and some big losers.
And if I just have a follow-up question to that.
Surely. Mr.
Chairman, at the present time, there are big winners and big losers in the process.
Correct.
And it's one of the things that, as I talk to various people in schools, that the people who are gaining, the districts that are gaining advantages and resources, don't want to talk about it very much, and the districts that are not able to generate revenue from those sources want to talk about it a lot. So it is it's a genuine equity issue as far as you're thinking about equalizing things. It's a genuine equity issue, at least from my perspective. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I think the appropriate comment on that might be that the average per pupil would be about 350 among all of the states, and the disparity will run from $1,534 per pupil in some to $71 in other districts. So you're absolutely correct on that. Representative Hunt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I realize you probably don't have this figure on the top of your head, but perhaps you could get it and provide it to the committee. We're going to be looking at House Bill 1067, which deals with the increasing and decreasing and so on and so forth. What I'd like to know is Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Roughly $336 million is the state share that's in the governor's budget, mm-hmm. present budget. Mm-hmm. Can you get us a figure as to how much that would be increased or decreased if the sparsity factor and the increasing, decreasing enrollment were not cut?
Okay, the sparsity factor was about $2.3 million.
Yeah.
And that is outside the formula that is done in a special appropriation typically. If we added back the decreasing enrollments, that would be about $3.5 million. And if we added back the increasing enrollments, that would be about another $3.25 million.
Good questions.
Approximately $9 million in those three areas, the difference. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any other questions relative to that or anything else here? Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a general comment, you know, because I was always curious how our formula ranked amongst other states, and I was surprised to find out from a couple of different independent studies that show they didn't comment on the level of funding, but it was more about equity. And they said that South Dakota probably has one of the most equitable formulas in the United States. And our only criticism that I heard was we probably don't do as much for not necessarily disadvantaged kids, but at-risk
kids. Students.
That was the only criticism. But as far as, you know, they almost look at South Dakota as a model in terms of what we do for school district, because a lot of them are fairly similar, and you know they figure local effort and state effort, but we have a lot of different tools to help equalize and help the school districts out. So, you know, as I was trying to figure out a way to make our formula better, I was surprised to find out that it probably is the most equitable.
Any other comments or questions? And do you have any further comments you'd like to make relative to, well, any of it here?
Not on the formula, but I was hoping to take just a couple minutes. I don't know how many of you have had a chance to go out and look at our website, but if you go to doe.sd.gov, and I'll just go back to the home page quick. And then if you just go to our A to Z topics, then scroll down until you get to state aid. And we really try to post pretty much anything that we can out to this website. But you're going to have the state aid issue brief, which I believe you received a copy of when the department did its presentation. That's going to, again, explain in brief format what we just went over here on the formula. We have if you click on the 2009 state aid, you're going to have your general need calculation, and this is going to list out for you by district as soon as it opens here. Okay, what you're going to get in here is your, and 06 state aid fall enrollment, we need that one because this is 09, I'm sorry. So you have your 06 state aid fall enrollment, and your 07 state aid fall enrollment. And if you take the greater of those two, or the averaging between the 06 and the 07, that's where your two-year averaging comes in. So then you can look in where the two-year averaging came in. The 08 is in here because we needed that for the growing enrollments. Column G is going to give you your two-year averaging count. So that's going to show you how many additional students above whatever their fall enrollment was last fall that they're receiving funding for. Column H gives the growing enrollment count, so that can show you the districts that qualify for growing enrollment, what the count is. Column I is the per student allocation, and as I said, there are a few school districts, for example, Carthage on here, that have not submitted, verified that they will be increasing their student pay by 3%, so they get the 46-42-02. We have the small school adjustment here, and that's the amount that they get per student based on the small school adjustment. And then that gives you your base need. But anyway, a lot of the numbers that you're looking for are going to be on this sheet. Another really good place to go is to our data and reporting. It's just over here on the left-hand navigation bar. And here you're going to get, when you get down to the educational statistics, that'll give you the fall enrollment census count, which is actually just going in and counting those, as it doesn't care if you're a half day or a full day or whatever, or if you're tuitioned in, tuitioned out. That's just the number of kids that are in the district. So there is a difference between that and the state aid fall enrollment count. It's going to take you to the statistical digest, which gives a profile of every district, and it's going to give you pretty much anything you want to know. We have the longitudinal data, which is going to show on a statewide basis. The revenue, the expenditures by category, it's going to give you fall enrollments. It also, we have a revenues for all funds. That might be something that everybody's interested in. But I encourage you to go out and to look at our website. You're going to find a lot of useful information out there, I think, and it's going to help answer some of the questions that you might have, and answer some of the questions you don't know you have.
I think that's very, very important. And if you haven't already marked those as favorites or put them in your computer, I would urge you to do so, so that you can pull those up rather quickly when you're discussing some of these things. And I think that we underestimate the power of our electronic system right now to be able to come forth with all of these figures instead of having to have mountains of paper here, and and you update that regularly, and I think we have done an excellent job in the state of preparing and getting all of this online and having it readily available, and it speeds up the process considerably. So thank you for doing that. Are there any other comments, questions here, or reactions? And we want to thank you for coming in on very, very short notice and to have provided an excellent presentation and anticipating some of our questions and concerns and answering the others. So, thank Representative you. Hunt.
Thank you. Just one practical
question. 3248 will get you to my receptionist. Yes. Anything else?
You can see we all wanted that number. Stick it on there too. Anything else? Again, we will. The number of education bills are not coming in rapidly at this point, so watch the bulletin board relative to the postings, and we'll take it from there. The bill that Representative Kirkaby was to have presented, 1105, will be scheduled at a later date, so check that. Are there any other items need to come before the committee today? If not, Chair will entertain a motion for adjournment. Moved by Representative Hunt, seconded by Representative Olson. Meeting is adjourned.
Aye.
Aye.